Welcome to the Minivade Gang podcast for Saturday, June 13th, 2009. I'm Steve Borsch, and along with me is Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Yeah, good morning. Beautiful Minnesota morning.
Yeah, you're by a lake. I know. I saw your picture. Thank you. And Phil Wilson, who's in a coffee shop in Kansas City.
No, in Kansas. I'm in Hutchinson,
in Kansas. Oh, okay. All right. They have coffee out there?
Yes, of course they do. I'll also put up a picture on Twitter. So,
oh, you did.
It's a lovely little. It's no Lakeview. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, it's a beautiful Kansas morning here.
Oh, it is good. Good.
Are you sitting in one of those big red chairs in your picture?
Yes, I am.
Wow, it looks comfy.
Oh, it is comfy. I didn't see your picture. I'll have to look at it. And then we have a very special guest on today, back fresh from Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. Bill Hyman, co-founder with Damon Allison. He's the co-founder of Codemorphic. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
You bet. Absolutely. So you guys have been very active. You know, at first I didn't even know that that you were behind the NPR app when I downloaded it the very first time. I found that out later. I think, Graham, you and I were talking about it. And I think you mentioned it.
I think it's kind of funny because, I mean, even the Star Tribune doesn't know that a local company is behind, like, the Minnesota Public Radio app or even the national version of it, the Public Radio Tuner.
Oh, really?
There was an article within the last week about top iPhone applications, and they actually brought up two apps. Well, they had a list of 10 or so, and two of the apps were the Minnesota Public Radio Tuner and also one called Pandora. And they missed the fact that both apps actually have Minnesota ties.
Right.
The Pandora app does too?
The Pandora app does too. Yeah. The person who wrote the Pandora app is named Neil Mix. He actually now lives in Appleton, Wisconsin as employee of Pandora. But he's originally from the Twin Cities metro area and has lots of connections here.
And Tim Westergren, who founded Pandora, has also got a lot of Minnesota roots. So
really, see, you guys have been holding.
He comes back
me.
To Minnesota, Minneapolis, quite a bit. So,
I have interesting.
That's cool. Well, I'm going to have to scold my friends at the Tribune at the business page for not knowing that. No, I'll point it out to them for sure.
I'm sure the Pioneer Press wouldn't have made that mistake. Julio is
on
the ball and those kind of things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, Julio's plugged in. Yep.
Well, so you guys have been doing, you've done a lot of apps. You've done the Public Radio Tuner and the NPR app, and you've been doing some stuff for vertical markets with the Cisco Media Hub Control and something for Blossom Medical.
Right. Yeah, over the last year, Codemorphic has been in existence as a corporation just over a year now, although Damon and I have been working on iPhone development for a little bit longer than that, probably stretching back to January of last year. And since that time, we've worked on and developed a fair number of applications. Now, one thing to understand about Codemorphic is we don't, or up to this point in time, we haven't really created applications of our own. We develop applications for other companies, businesses, people. Mm-hmm. So we're a consultancy primarily that has a technological focus on the iPhone. So in the last year, we've developed a series of applications across a whole bunch of vertical markets. You know, we've some with Minnesota ties, some are more national. We've already talked about the Minnesota Public Radio Tuner, which we did for American Public Media here in St. Paul, which actually American Public Media has taken and repurposed it for other stations within their network.
Mm.
So KPCC in LA, I believe, has a version of it. And Central Florida Radio also does. And those are all based on the original work we did for American Public Media. We've also talked about the Public Radio Tuner, which is done for a consortium of public radio organizations at the national level. So it's a consortium of National Public Radio, Public Radio Exchange, Public Radio International, I don't know, PI. there's like a whole alphabet list of all these public radio organizations around. But that work was originally done. We took the American Public Media application and we added more functionality to allow that would be appropriate for the national level. Things like geographical search. So it would use the GPS on the iPhone to allow you find the stations around you. Also, we added some favoriting capabilities so users could save which stations they'd like, and also search capability. So now instead of dealing with, you know, at the Minnesota Public Radio app, there's only three, now there's four different stations you can tune into. At the national radio level, you're dealing with hundreds of stations.
Right.
And so we had to adapt the application to accommodate that.
Well, that brings up a question because I looked at all the apps on the iPhone just before we got on the horn here, and I have the Public Radio Tuner, and then I noticed that there was a new one called Public Radio Tuner New.
Yes.
Why a separate one rather than a replacement of the original?
Okay, well, that... some of it has to do with the history of how, which organizations owned and distributed the Public Radio Tuner.
Okay.
And some of it has to do with some of the restrictions that Apple has on how applications can move between organizations in the App Store. So to address the first part of that, initially it was American Public Media that refashioned the app to a point and to be used by the national market. So they wanted to add a lot of the American Public Media stations into a single app as well as other public radio stations. And it was that refashioning of the application that was basically the 1.0 release of the Public Radio Tuner. And it wasn't until we did the 1.1 release that it was basically developed by the national collaboration of these public radio organizations.
Got it.
Now, to the second point, why do we have this public radio player or public radio tuner new? Well, when the 1.0 version of the public radio tuner was released, and also for the 1.1 versions, it was released under the Apple Developer Certificate for American Public Media. So if you look in the App Store for Public Radio Player, you go into the details for Public Radio Player 1.1.2, or I think that's the version that currently exists, you'll notice that it's distributed by American Public Media.
Right.
However, if you go to the Public Radio Player 1.2, you'll see that it's probably Public Radio Exchange as the distributor.
Well, you know, these guys need to do some mergers and acquisitions, don't you think, Phil? In the public radio space.
Well, you know, that's the thing. It's all about, you know, who you want to be labeled as and, you know, branding and that sort of a thing. So, yeah, it's kind of a difficult situation. There's a lot of players in the public radio space.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Bill, what happened that was fun at the Worldwide Developers Conference? What really stood out for you, and you know, what was hot?
Did you see Steve Jobs? That's what I want to know. Was he walking around? Or was he in an iron lung? What was it?
Yeah, well, I didn't get to see Steve Jobs. There were definitely rumors that he would appear at the keynote, or actually, it would become a Steve note. but those never materialized. I actually, you know, I didn't think that Apple would actually bring him on public. I don't know whether they have this whole weekend at Bernie's thing going on or what.
I was going to say, bring him out in public. It's like you're going to wheel him out on a plane. It's all right. He's still here now. Put him back in his cage.
But, you know, supposedly he's supposed to come back to Apple full time, I think, at the end of this month and take over. And then, you know, but I think part of, you know, kind of getting off track a little bit from Worldwide Developer Conference, which we'll get back to, I'm sure. One of the things is, I think it's important for Apple as a corporation to show that they're more of a corporation than Steve. And during his absence, I think they've gone to great lengths to, you know, be using Phil Schiller and Scott Forstall to come out and show, you know, the Apple and the iPhone and Mac development goes on. You know, there is continuity even in the post Steve days. So to help consumers and investors have more faith within Apple, I think having this absence has sort of forced Apple to demonstrate that, and I think they're doing a pretty good job at it.
Yeah, there's been some analysis on the growth of Apple even while he's been absent. But also Scott Forstall, I mean, he's done. I've seen him now. I've watched. I haven't been there in person like you, but I've watched the you know, the keynotes and or the various SDK developer discussions when they released the 3.0 SDK. That, you know, he's done a really good job. He's very, very clear. He's sometimes it's a little bit too rah-rah.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I absolutely agree. Having attended the keynote this year in person, one of the interesting observations that I have is how he plays the audience a bit, you know, to get reaction. Specifically around the inaction and slow moving lethargy of AT&T when it comes to iPhone technologies and what they support. At one point, the crowd at the keynote was actually booing because of AT&T not supporting, you know, things like tethering, MMS, having higher upgrade prices than all the other carriers or operators throughout the world.
Right.
And
Go ahead. Bill, tell me a little bit. Is there any more to the rumors of iPhone making the transition to Verizon, or Verizon being, you know, getting access to the iPhone? Have you heard more about that?
I've heard everything that you've probably heard. It wouldn't surprise me at some point as the iPhone's penetration and saturation within the AT&T among AT&T subscribers kind of levels off, that Apple would want to move to other carriers, including Verizon. Verizon would be a really big deal. But there actually was little to no talk that I've heard, you know, in the last week about that. Although you have to believe that Apple, well, first of all, AT&T wants to extend their exclusive contract on the iPhone with Apple beyond 2010. I don't know when in 2010 the current contract expires. So I know that over the last month or two, Apple and AT&T have been in the process of renegotiating the contract. And I think what we're witnessing with Apple, you know, sort of playing the audience to, particularly the developers, to boo AT&T, is, and AT&T's lethargy at bringing out these new features is all an effect of these negotiations that are currently ongoing. You know, it's like this chess game being played between these two companies. Ultimately, Apple's going to have to move to other carriers. I mean, I think a logical next step would be actually T-Mobile, because it uses GSM technology, just like the iPhone is built. In order to move to like Sprint or Verizon, they would have to do some re-engineering on the iPhone to add a multi-mode chipset to support the CDMA.
Yeah, but clearly, you know, if they wanted to be, you take the fastest growing mobile platform and you hook it with the strongest network, it seems like it's a no-brainer for Apple and Verizon to get together.
Absolutely. You know, and I heard Verizon actually was given the first shot at the iPhone, and they couldn't get the control that they're used to having, and they couldn't deal with it, so Apple moved on.
Yep, yeah. I've heard that too.
Well, one of the rumors persistent has been this MediaPad kind of extension of the iPod or the iPhone platform. Could that be the Verizon device?
The MediaPad, i.e. like the tablet, i.e. the Newton 2?
Well, like a large version of the iPhone, basically, but having a chipset in there that supports the Verizon network. So it's almost like a netbook tablet, if you will.
Right.
But
you know, the rumors about, you know, the tablets and the larger iPhones and so forth have persisted for a couple of years now, you know, ever since iPhone has been released. And the developers are anxiously anticipating that Apple will at some point come out in that space. Now, one of the interesting things is that if Apple did come out with a new device like that, that was not a phone per se, but perhaps hooked into the Verizon data network directly, I don't know how that would affect their AT&T contract, whether that would be almost a loophole that they could go through. Who knows? You know, there's a lot of possibilities there. And unfortunately, Apple is very, very good at keeping secrets about what their plans ultimately are.
They are, aren't they?
Given the announcement of the iPhone 3GS, do you see kind of a, from an applications perspective, the market sort of bifurcating from the original platform, the first and second generation, to now this more powerful one?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's actually a lot of concern among the development community about, you know, applications, and there's a lot of concern within the developer community about applications and how you develop applications so that they can run on, you know, both the original first and second generation platforms and then the new one that's coming out. And Apple this week did at Worldwide Developer Conference did help developers learn what it would take to make your application so that they could run on both platforms, but they weren't totally clear either, you know? And so there's a concern among the development community about, you know, at what point do I kind of move over and, you know, create an app that fully takes advantage of this new iPhone 3GS capabilities. And, you know, the specs on the new iPhone are a definite improvement. I mean, you have a 3-megapixel camera, you have video, you have a faster processor, more memory, a better graphics processor, built-in compass, which actually doesn't seem like it'd be that big of a deal, but there's some really cool stuff, you know, you can do as an iPhone developer with a compass that you may not.
Not to mention what it means to the spelunker business.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I geocache with the kids. And so one of the frustrations with the geocaching program on the iPhone is that the developer of the geocaching application has to sort of fabricate a compass, you know, based on your GPS position, GPS movement. So having a built-in compass will make geocaching on the iPhone much easier.
Well, there you go.
So, but, you know, to the compass, one of the interesting things, if you think about it, you can use it more than just finding north. From the innovative angle, you'll probably see applications where let's say you're in a real estate application, you have like a 360 degree view of a house, or Google Street View where you have 360 degree. How about using the compass so that if, as a person physically turns around, it shows you a new image in that 360 degree view. Another possibility with the compass is because the Earth's magnetic field is actually kind of a weak force, you may see a whole new class of devices or like styluses or other magnetic devices that could be sold with as accessories to the iPhone to support different games. To support different games, like if you have a magnet that you put right up next to the new iPhone, you can actually affect how its compass behaves. So there will be some innovative uses of the compass as a new input device for the iPhone, which should be kind of interesting, you know, how that plays out.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, I'm wondering about something that just as a user, who also, you know, my clients talk about the mobile space and what they need to do to get it in the mobile space. But I look at the iPhone and see what a lot of people see, which is, there's, you know, supposedly 25,000 apps out there, and I maybe see the top 1%.
Oh, 50, yep.
50,000?
50,000.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So all of us, you know, in the app store on the iPhone, we'll see just the cream of the crop or, you know, different choices, maybe new and so forth. But, you know, the companies that you're doing work for do their own marketing. So it's up to them to really drive the awareness and so forth. But, I'm sure they come to you and say, what do we need to do in terms of submissions and, you know, getting it out there and all that. What are your frustrations? What did you hear from other developers with respect to having people even find them, and B, you know, getting the word out and, you know, driving the business and things of that nature?
Right. Absolutely. Search within the Apple iTunes App Store is something that needs a lot of work from the developer point of view. One of the top iPhone game developers is called NG Moco. It's based out of Europe, Holland, I believe. I actually met some of the developers at one of the parties. One of the observations that they're seeing, you know, they actually are kind of a brand name in terms of creating new and innovative iPhone and iPod Touch specific game applications. And as the number of applications increase within the App Store, they're seeing their own sales kind of trail off and saturate, even for their new applications that come out. And they're attributing it to a couple different things. I mean, one of which is just the ability to find their applications. They're getting lost in all the noise.
Right.
And they do produce very high quality applications. And the other is just this pricing pressure that is going on within the App Store. You know, this race to the bottom in terms of price. And a company like NG Moco is actually probably going to be fine. I mean, they just closed their second round of funding, and you know, I think overall they have a great platform that they're building on, and I think they have it right. But one of the net effects of what's going on is that there's going to be a lot of small indie developers that have gone to the iPhone that won't get noticed, that will feel the price pressure to price their apps at a low price, and they won't make money and they won't survive. Right now, from the iPhone development's perspective, I think there's this gold rush going on, and it is very reminiscent to me of, you know, the pre.com days. And I kind of felt that type of attitude when I was at the Worldwide Developer Conference parties and so forth, like, you know, we're almost, you know, this feeling among developers like, oh, this great platform, so forth, it's all true. And, you know, everyone's going to do great. And, you know, the companies that were sponsoring some of these parties were just spending like, you know, they were spending a lot of money on these parties and just to have a party and just to have a name recognition and so forth. And it, I think that in the next year or so, the bubble is going to pop. You know, I don't know whether it's going to be a slow release or I think some of it is actually happening already as you hear about various developers who are like, you know, I just can't make it. I can pay my car payment having a 99 cent app out there, but that's a stretch. And, you know, you can't, it's hard to keep a company going.
So you're saying my dream of making a flashlight app is probably not a good idea?
At this point, flashlight apps, that market is saturated.
It's saturated? Okay, doggone it.
Yeah.
I fart too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the fart application, Bill, whoopee cushion market saturated also.
Yeah, Bill, you referred to the company in Europe as having just gotten a round of funding, and that's something to discuss here because there is VC money coming into some of these iPhone development firms, Capulous being one with TapTap Revenge that's raised a fair amount of money. So you know, that's what it's going to take for many of these firms to do proper marketing is raising, you know, large amounts of funds, and the VC funds are doing some of that, but then they're under pressure too, and there's not a lot of money flowing in venture capital in general. But the game is going to the big guys, I think, in a lot of cases. You know, they're the ones that are going to be successful just because they have money to market, you know?
Right. And one of the things, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, I haven't done any kind of survey to see what how many iPhone development firms have raised VC, but it's got to be in the scores of companies, you know, 20, 30, 40 companies that probably have gone that route, and I have no doubt there are many more out there trying to do that. That's not to say that an individual independent developer can be successful. Can't be successful without VC money, because I think some can and some are, but as you allude to, it's a small percentage that are really making a real go of it, making a significant profit.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, and then that Kleiner Perkins $100 million fund, the iFund that they created, I've heard absolutely nothing from them in terms of what they've done.
Yeah, I don't know that they have a winner yet. They've definitely invested some of that money, but I don't know how much of it or you know, if they're actively still investing.
Yeah.
But maybe some of our readers or listeners can tell us what they know.
Wow, interesting. What about, and this may be probably the obvious next question, but I'll ask it anyway. Tons of buzz about the Palm Pre that seemed to quiet down quickly during WWDC. And then Tim, you and I have talked, and you've talked about it on the podcast here about Google Android. So Bill, you guys, when you look at the market and the space, are you staying focused on iPhone apps? Are you thinking about moving into other spaces with other smartphones?
The simple answer to your question is yes, we're definitely looking at the other mobile phone options. One of CodeMorphic is actually looking at, you know, this whole next generation of mobile computers that people have. So we definitely see that iPhone obviously is the current hot phone. Right now, I mean, we got a lot of questions about Android, but, you know, not a whole lot of action there from the consulting point of view. And I think part of it is Android has a relatively small market penetration right now, maybe 6% of all new smartphone sales. But, you know, I see over the next 12 to 18 months, Android being much more ubiquitous than it is now. Mm-hmm. As Google rolls out Android on, I think they said 18 different handsets across multiple carriers. I think, you know, as people go through the next phone upgrade process on their own home carriers, Android's going to be more of a player. From the technical point of view, I think Android has lots of great features. It gives me as a developer much more access to the hardware. It's basically an open standard device. I mean, you can download the source code to the Android operating system if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is completely different than Apple's whole attitude on this whole thing, where, you know, we'll give you what we give you, and, you know, you'll have to figure out the rest,
right,
to the developer. You know, Google's Android doesn't quite have nearly the polish of Apple. You know, Apple's very big into the graphic design, usability, and so forth. But I've used an Android phone several days in a row, multiple times. I have one that I'll put my iPhone SIM card in every now and then to try out. I actually have an unlocked one that I purchased directly from Google through their developer program. And, you know, I have to say I like it for what it is, but it's not an iPhone. It's its own device.
Yeah.
The Palm Pre, you know, there's a tremendous amount of developer interest in the Palm Pre. I think that comes from the fact that Palm is creating their software development environment to make use of a lot of existing technologies that a lot of developers currently have. HTML, CSS, JavaScript, you know, web development technologies will be used to develop applications for that, which is great because it'll make it easier for a lot more developers to create applications for it.
Mm-hmm.
On the downside is web technologies aren't high performance. And so whether the Palm will be the gaming device that the iPhone is, I doubt it. But, you know, I don't think that's really the market it's aimed at either. So it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, as you look over the next 5 years, you know, put down to what Johnny Carson's, what do you call himself when you predict things?
Karnak.
Oh, Karnak. Oh,
Karnak. 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 Yeah. Yeah. Karnak the Magnificent.
Yeah, yeah, putting my Karnak hat on. You know, and probably if you look at this, or listen to this 5 years from now, you're going to laugh just as much as you would at Johnny Carson. Right now, it seems like in my view, there's basically room in the market for three dominant smartphone players. And right now, you know, number one and two is iPhone and RIM, BlackBerry. Who's going to be number three? I think Google has a really good shot. Palm, I don't know. It's kind of an outlier. Microsoft, you know,
Not on Sprint. Yeah, yeah. Palm's not going to do it on Sprint.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, they're going to have to get into Verizon or something. I think their contract with Sprint is only 6 months exclusive.
Verizon's supposed to kick in December.
Yeah, I think that will help the Palm Pre quite a bit. You know, you have Windows Mobile, you know, Microsoft's coming out with their Windows Mobile 7, you know, everything's 7 for Microsoft that's coming out. And they're going to have their own app store. Unfortunately for Microsoft, I think that they had an opportunity, but they're just late to this game. I don't think that they're going to be able to crack it now. And there's going to be a lot of an interesting struggle for who's going to be number three. I think BlackBerry and Research in Motion, they're going to have to go beyond what they've done for the Storm to stay where they are, you know, to have better touch capabilities. And they're coming out with a Storm 2, which I think removes things like the annoying click screen on the original Storm, which drove me nuts and prevent me from getting one last year. But, you know, fundamentally, it's still a BlackBerry. From a developer point of view, developing for the BlackBerry is kind of an uncool type of thing. I mean, well, first of all, I have a Mac, and they require Windows to dump to their SDK and so forth. And, you know, it's like, there's, in my opinion, it's ridiculous that they have these requirements. I mean, they're sort of missing out on developers. They're basically blocking out certain part of the development community just because they choose to sure. require Windows. But sure. but you know, their key market is the enterprise. You know, 95% of all white collar employees probably have a BlackBerry, you know, from their companies, I'd say, or so it seems. They're ubiquitous for sure. And so they're just because of their market dominance, and they're going to be a player, like it or not. You know, corporate IT departments aren't going to turn around and say, oh yeah, now we'll support the iPhone, and you know, overnight. That's going to be a really slow process, I'm sure.
What effect do you think that dropping the entry into the iPhone to $99 will have on adoption?
You know, that's a good question. I think one of the things it's going to do is it's going to drop the prices on the resale for 3G devices on eBay. whether it yep. increases market, I really would be surprised if it'll move much of the market. Because ultimately, you know, the total cost of ownership for an iPhone on AT&T with a 3-year contract or 2-year contract, sorry, is about $3,700. I think I just saw. You know, by the time you pay for the device, you know, pay for your monthly fees, including the data access plan, which if you want 3G is $30 a month. You know, that extra $100, I think it's such a small percentage of the overall cost or total cost of ownership that it's not going to make that big of a difference. Now, on the other hand, one thing it might do is it might allow Apple and AT&T to clear out their older phone stock.
right.
You know, there might be some people that for whatever reason do choose, but I can't see that being the key attraction to bringing people over to AT&T and getting the iPhone.
Hey, Bill, I've got a question about your experience at the conference. You mentioned your model is not to CodeMorphic's model is not to publish your own apps, but rather to develop apps for other companies. Did you experience a lot of interest, or did you see a lot of interest there from developers or other attendees for the large brands as far as apps for marketing purposes? And, you know, you're obviously doing a lot of applications for large companies and large brands. Are you seeing more of the development community going that way, or more interest from the brands that were maybe in attendance at the event?
Right. I think that is a yes and a yes. I think as some of these independent developers are seeing that they're not going to make it on these 99-cent apps, but yet they still want to continue doing iPhone development, they are naturally looking at, you know, basically pimping themselves out as iPhone consultants. And so... as a way of, you know, getting more of a consistent income. You know, you're not risking everything by developing something up front and then seeing how it does in the App Store. You know, someone else is basically assuming, you know, a fair amount of the risk of the initial cost, you know, the fixed cost of developing a product or an app for the App Store. To answer the second question in terms of branding, yes, there's definitely a fair amount of interest in the brands to get on the iPhone. you know, the cachet and the label of like, oh, look, download our iPhone app. One of the brands that CodeMorphic's working with, and we're going to be releasing an app. Actually, it's going to be under the CodeMorphic, under our CodeMorphic developer account, interestingly enough, is for Bacardi. And the Bacardi application will allow you to essentially, it's promoting, you know, some of the newer brands, rum flavors for the Bacardi brand. It has drink recipes, a drink recipe database. It has an iBeer-like functionality, you know, where you can pour one and you see glass ice in the iPhone as you tilt it. It, you know, the liquid level will go down. It has hooks into Bacardi Radio, which is an internet radio station that Bacardi has, and they play like, you know, Phil would probably know the exact terms, but for this genre, it's kind of a hip hop, contemporary, almost KDWB like mix. And it also makes use of the GPS and allows you to find, you know, local taxi companies, you know, to get a ride home, or local bars where you want to find the bar first and then the taxi second. And as I was talking to developers at the various parties, they suggested that we put one big button for find a taxi rather than having this narrow thing, because you wouldn't maybe have.
You'll see two of them.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we should put multiple of right there, you know, and you just hit. In terms of brand interest, yes, I mean, the brands are going to be on the iPhone, and, you know, the brands will be on the other smartphones as they increase in popularity. You know, I just saw that USA Today was touting that they just released USA Today for Android. So it's all coming. You know,
yeah, they're going to be doing, they'll do multiple apps on platforms.
Absolutely. Certainly. And then, you know, as a consultancy, you know, we at CodeMorphic, you know, see that that's going to be a natural trend. And so our intent is to be able to help these large companies and brands get their applications out on this multitude of platforms.
So you had mentioned that you have two new apps coming for the App Store this week. One is obviously the Bacardi one you just talked about, and the other one is this Smarter Agent Real Estate app. When you had mentioned that, I immediately went to and thought about you, Tim, in that how great it would be to have a vertical market platform app. That's the only way I can describe it, with similar functionality that that somebody would know, if I'm a winery, it's going to cost me X to have an app with just reskinned and with my data in it. Same thing in the real estate space. I'm certain that there are, you know, publications for realtors and other things that, you know, people are going to look at, you know, how do we create an iPhone application front end to what we offer? Are you seeing any of that with respect to people coming to you and asking you for essentially a vertical market, generic, empty application framework that they can reskin and populate with data and get to market quickly?
Yeah, I absolutely. You know, we've see that. You know, one example where we've seen that is, let's say, in band and music promotion. You know, a lot of the rock bands have similar needs in terms of what they want available through an application, you know, whether it's their discography, their biographies, their tour dates, you know, the ability to purchase tickets, the ability to hook into some RSS feeds to do band updates, to allow fans to listen to music, and so forth. You know, and the commonalities between all the band apps are identical. And so if we have a platform, and actually we actually internally at CodeMorphic do have a platform for this specific use case that we're working with a company to bring out with a band that's out of Indiana, but it's big in Japan.
What a guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's like us. The Minovate Gang podcast is huge in China.
Really?
I'm kidding. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bill.
I think we sold more records than Slim Whitman, to tell you the truth.
So we have this platform we've developed, and we're going to work with this other company in Indiana to reskin it for this one band, and with the hope that we can get out there and sort of push it as a platform that we can reapply to the needs of other bands and other musical artists. So, yeah, I mean, for a lot of the vertical market spaces where the needs are very similar, yes, we can absolutely do that. And it'll make sense to also then, as other smartphone platforms come available and become more popular, to have a similar platform so that it makes integration, reskinning of the content easier and for a quicker time to market.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to address Smarter Agent Real Estate, the Smarter Agent Real Estate application for the iPhone, we did for a company out of the Philadelphia area called Smarter Agent. And Smarter Agent, in many ways, is a real estate data aggregator. They license real estate feeds from agencies and MLS systems and national real estate organization, you know, like realestate.com. And they aggregate that into, they have these massive databases that contain, you know, listings all over the country. You know, one of the big issues in the real estate industry is the data is just so fragmented between the MLS, and there's so many licensing restrictions in terms of how you use it and how you can display it. And even from the technical point of view, the data format of the how they store their listings, you know, is completely different from MLS to MLS. And Smarter Agent has actually worked hard to solve that problem. And what they're doing is they have a critical mass nationwide of all these agencies that they, on a regular basis, you know, daily, get new data for real estate listings, and also listings, you know, for apartments for sale, homes for sale, and apartments for sale. So, what they also have, they create applications and have for several years on a whole wide variety of phones, you know, from, you know, the dumbest of the dumb phones that can barely display much of anything to some of the newer phones. They contracted with us to actually develop their iPhone applications for them. They also internally are developing an application for Android that will be released soon thereafter.
So can you guide us on and our listeners on and I know that this is like saying how much is a website, but can you guide at all with respect to what an average brand app might run in terms of creating it? And
well, that,
I know it's putting you on the spot. I know.
It's bigger than a bread box and smaller than a house. it ultimately comes down to what you want within the application. I would say probably on the low end, you know, you're talking about, you know, the low tens of thousands of dollars, you know, for a simple basic application. And then, you know, of course, it just goes up based upon what sort of a functionality you want in an app.
Yep.
So going back, one other thing I'd like to address about the Smarter Agent is the fact that Smarter Agent actually owns 3 or 4 patents on geographical search for real estate in other locations. And so, you know, one of the things that some of the other players are going to have to, like Zillow and Trulia, are going to have to face will be their patents, sure. Perhaps at some point, you know.
Yep.
So these patents were awarded to them, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. So it's, you know, as Damien and I were thinking early on Codemorphic of developing applications for the iPhone, we did put out, you know, just a teaser prototype application for real estate search. We called it Home Finder. And we put out there, that's actually how we got the attention of a Smarter Agent. And
they sent their lawyer. They had your lawyer.
We got a very friendly letter that made us very aware that they did own these patents. It's like, you know, I think we'd rather be on that side of the deal. And they retained us as their iPhone developers. But, you know, I think in some ways, as you know, the whole mobile world grows and becomes more established and more people have these next generation smart computing device / phones, you know, on them all the time, you know, as there's more and more money to be made in the area, I think some of these patents and intellectual property things will become a bigger, you know, they'll rise to the surface. You know, various companies that own patents on this, that, and the other thing are going to, you know, start really pushing and enforcing them. So that's going to be a trend that will probably start showing up in the next 2 or 5 years. And I'm not saying that Smarter Agent will necessarily do that, but I just think that it's representative of what's out there. You know, when web technologies finally start catching on and so forth, you know, you'd have, you know, some of these patents that would come out of nowhere that would then ultimately force, like Microsoft, when you have ActiveX content, you have to click on the control for it to start behaving rather than, you know, automatically when the page loads, you know. For example, and force companies to redo, you know, how they're making use of these newer technologies. So anyway, that's a bigger mega trend that, you know, will have to be followed, you know.
Yep. Well, we're kissing up on the end of our adventure today. And I'm wondering if there's anything else that we didn't talk about, Bill, that you wanted to know about, or Phil, Tim, Graham, anything that you wanted to ask that we didn't get to?
Well, you know, just to talk a little bit about some of the interesting things from Worldwide Developer Conference. One of the nights that every night there's various parties that are sponsored by different companies. And Damon and I actually hung out a lot with this Neil Mix of Pandora. The one night we didn't go to a party with him, he got to meet Steve Wozniak.
Of all the luck.
Exactly. You know, I would have loved to meet Woz. You know, Neil told me that Woz, he is such a bundle of energy. Like, he's so wound up and so excitable. And, you know, he's a very interesting person. Something, you know, somewhat more relevant to what, you know, this podcast and how we use it is I actually got to talk to some of the Skype developers one-on-one. And there's some really cool stuff coming on in Skype. When I met them initially, my first reaction was, I love your application, but I'm really irritated that I can't get my voicemail.
Yep.
And they said, we just submitted it to Apple for review, so it should appear in the next week. I'm like, yes, thank you.
Fantastic.
The other thing is, they were telling me about this whole new codec that they're actually coming out with. They've developed it. It's called Silk, and it basically gives you a higher or a wider dynamic range of sound with lower bandwidth. And they're integrating this into the Skype applications, and they're going to basically open source it so anyone can make use of it.
We're using it now. I'm using the 2.8 Mac beta, which does in fact have the Silk codec in it. Mm-hmm. And I can really hear the difference.
Yeah. They were claiming that, the Silk codec, the call quality will be better than what you get on existing mobile networks and even possibly landline. I mean, it's incredible. But, you know, I think the key thing is they're open sourcing it. You know, Skype, in talking to the developers, they're all about openness and freedom of choice. One of the stories that one of the Skype developers was telling me about was how certain countries, specifically the United Arab Emirates, actually wants to block Skype from being used over Wi-Fi even. And they believe that, you know, some of it has to do with keeping down some of the lower classes from getting access to, you know, these great communication technologies. And
interesting,
you know, Skype, it's fairly dominant in Western Europe. You know, the Skype developers I was talking to were actually from Estonia. That's where the development of Skype's done. I was not aware of that. It's predominant in Western Europe, and it's starting to gain more of a foothold within the U.S., particularly with Oprah, you know, doing Skype calls now online. And I think the latest Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is doing Skype calls to the experts and so forth. So Skype's getting more brand recognition in the U.S. And one of the interesting effects of this will be, you know, how it will chip away at the overall dominance of the incumbent carriers. And, you know, the companies, you know, even on the mobile side, you know, all our complaints about AT&T and the other mobile carriers, and even on the landline side, you know, landline, you know, I may not have a landline if it wouldn't be for my, I currently get DSL through Quest, and the fact that certain devices, i.e. my DirecTV satellite receivers, have to hook into a phone line. But as the quality improves on these VoIP applications, VoIP applications, you know, it's going to continue to chip away at the control that a lot of these monopolies have had over the years. And Skype's all about pushing that and making people move to that next level.
So you didn't have you didn't have your tinfoil hat on though when you were talking to those guys about you know, there's been all this discussion about the 2 or 3 day Skype going down last year, and you know, blaming it on the Windows networking, but everyone's saying, well, it was really about installing a back door. You know, and so forth. It would have been great to get somebody's take on that.
Well, you know, the Skype developer I was talking to specifically, I swear he, you know, based on, you know, we got into some philosophical discussions. It's sort of like, reminds me of the Charlton Heston NRA thing, you know, they'll take away, the way they'll get my gun is by prying it from my cold dead hand, yeah, or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, this project manager specifically that I had a long conversation with, you know, I absolutely feel like he is so into the whole freedom aspect of it. I mean, he's originally from Finland and now living in Estonia, which is a former Soviet republic. And, you know, just talking about how the geopolitical things that are going on there in terms of reassertion of Russian influence over the former Soviet republics and so forth are topics that strike near and dear to his heart and affect him personally in terms of loss of freedom and so forth. And it, he wouldn't go down with a fight. I'm sure there's a lot of people that there that would not, would follow in his suit. I mean, yeah. So.
Well, if I could, let me end with just how profound, and I did a post about it called NPR iPhone and a Code Morphic App. And it was about listening to mid-morning on NPR in my car. I got to get out. I park in a ramp. I got to get out of my car, and I got probably a 15 to 20 minute walk to my appointment. And I thought, oh, geez, I really want to keep listening to this guy. This guy, Simon Winchester from the UK, who'd written a book about discovering China. And I'm listening to the app, or I'm listening. So I pull up the app and I plug in my headphones. I walk the 15 to 20 minutes to my appointment. And the guy is describing this, or telling the story about his car breaking down in the middle of nowhere in China. And he turns on his iPhone and he's got signal. And then he's got GPRS, so he has data. And he finds a hotel near him and pulls it up. And they end up coming and rescuing him. But it was just, you know, ironic that I'm listening to and he's telling the story about an iPhone and so on and so forth. Of course, I told my son about this, who's 14, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, Dad, you could have done that with a transistor radio." So,
well, yeah, one of the things that I've talked at length about, or I, you know, one of the analogies I use with, you know, public radio tuner to for people that don't really understand, well, you know, why would you want to do that type of thing? It's like, it's the new transistor radio. I mean, I'm surprised your 14 year old son knew what transistor radio was.
Well, he does only because we have stuff downstairs like an old typewriter and old computers. And now the new, or the Casio 2-inch Watchman is going to go down, there with the other historical artifacts.
Yeah. So you have a technological museum in your basement.
Kind of, kind of
sounds like. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's the new transistor radio. And one of the things, you know, one of the applications that we're developing that's in an internal beta right now is the extension to the public radio tuner. And it's going to be called the Public Radio Player 2.0. And what it will do beyond just allowing live streaming, it will now give you access to program schedules across all the stations and also access to podcasts and on-demand type of content. So your limitation is no longer at the, being at the right place at the right time when it's being streamed. So in your case, you were able to actually get out of your car and listen to the live stream, you know, on your newfangled transistor radio, the iPhone and the application. But soon, you know, if for whatever reason you didn't even have that, you'd be able to use your iPhone app at a later time and look at for that particular show in an on-demand context and actually just play it back at a later time.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Well, we got to end. So, Bill, I want to thank you very much for joining us on a Saturday morning, especially after you just got back from WWDC, and really appreciate you being on.
Yes, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. You know, I got in, finally got home maybe about 7 or 8 hours ago. So,
Oh, wow, you are a trooper.
No kidding.
That's why I asked for the 30-minute delay on the start.
All right.
I need a little bit more beauty sleep.
Great.
There you go.
So, but thank you. It's been fun. And, you know, I look forward to being invited on in the future to talk more about this.
All right. And Graham, have fun up there at the lake, and Phil down in Kansas, and Tim, you down in Lakeville.
Yep. Have a good week.
Yes. Thanks.
You guys have a great week, guys.
Take care now.
It's summer, yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.